You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Greetings, friends. It's me, Duncan, and you're listening to the DTFH. This is a podcast being broadcast from deep underneath Mount St. Helens. I live in a tiny metal box and I don't know how to get the fuck out of here, but they've given me recording equipment and some top tier Wi-Fi so I can blast my ramblings out to you. If you've noticed that the intros have seemed a little abbreviated lately, it's because right now I'm moving. All of my material possessions are in a truck headed towards Austin, Texas, and I'm traveling doing stand-up comedy. So I'm doing these short intros. I hope you don't mind. Don't worry. Starting next week, I will once again drop the sweet flowers of my beautiful voice and my incredible musical ability deep into your waxy ear holes. I also want to invite you to come see me in person. If you're listening to this on the week of June 6th, you can come see me and Johnny Pemberton at the Helium Comedy Club in Philadelphia. And then 2 weeks later, I'm going to be at Zany's in Rosemont, Illinois. All the links you need to get tickets are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. But until then, we're going to do these abbreviated intros. And by the way, we don't need some complex intro because today's podcast is with a Taoist monk, Monk Yun Ru, who blew my fucking mind. Are you kidding me? Wait till you hear this. This is why I podcast, for conversations like this. You want to hear a Taoist monk's near-death experience and vision of the apocalypse? You're going to get that. You want to get an introduction to what Taoism is or listen to a podcast that's probably going to piss off the Chinese Communist Party? Then you've got that too. Oh my God, this is a glorious episode. Today's guest is not only an accomplished martial artist, but he's also a brilliant author. He's written so many books, too many to name here, but I'd like to recommend The Monk of Park Avenue, which you can find on Amazon.com or by going to his website, which is monkyunru.com. Again, that's monk, monkyunru.com/books. As always, all the links you need to find him are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. But you should for sure subscribe to this man's newsletter, which you can again find at the website I just mentioned. Now, everybody, strap in and get ready to get your mind blown by today's glorious guest. Everybody, please welcome Monk Yun Ru to the DTFH.
Yeah, that the alternative slash integrative slash complementary thing has been very much a topic of contention in my family, because my father was a very famous physician, and he went to China very early, like in the 70s and 80s, and he witnessed some open heart surgery using no anesthesia. And it was done with acupuncture and a Valium. And when he came back with photos and descriptions of this, everyone said he was a fool and he had been duped, and that if you open the thoracic cage, you have no pressure on the lungs, so you can't breathe. And my dad should have known better than to be fooled by such a magician's trick. And he was so angry. He said, listen, you know, I'm a cardiologist and I spend my life in ORs. And, you know, it wasn't a talking head with a body lying underneath hidden. You know, that's not what happened. I'm not an idiot. Yeah. And I saw what I saw. How it works, I don't know. But no, he ended up writing a whole book about it. So he was kind of a little more inclined in favor of Weil's theories and thoughts than a lot of other allies.
Yeah. Well, it's day. I mean, isn't that reaction, couldn't you say that's a form of racism? That's just a form of Western racism, which is these people over there, they're savages. They're going to trick you. Don't fall for their bullshit. Whereas over here in the West, we've got it all figured out. And we've got it so figured out that we're going to just or try to erase a culture's ancient practice as like being fraudulent or a grift.
You're spot on, and it's a sort of a pet thing of mine about which I speak and write often. At the same time, that doesn't mean that there aren't liars and cheats and charlatans sure. in China, and it also doesn't mean that that regime should be mistaken for the people, because, you know, it's the epicenter of evil on planet Earth right now. And those poor people are suffering so much.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean the People's Republic of China? You mean there's the Chinese Communist
yeah,
State?
Yeah, talking about the Chinese Communist Party. Yeah.
Do you...
Right. So there, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a reason for some antipathy, but it's not a racial
Oh, yeah. Reason. Oh, yeah, I got you. Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, that's it's so crazy to imagine that this planet is a series of seems to be a bunch of cultural test tubes trying out all these various reality tunnels, and that seems to be the reality tunnel that, if there is going to be one that encompasses the planet, that's probably going to be it, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, and we have to do our best to let that not happen, but I
especially
you're
with
right.
AI, all the money they're putting into AI and stuff, it's just a matter of time. It seems like their ability to not be in a hurry about how they're operating, you know, like in the United States, we seem to be in some kind of crazy rush. We're bombing anyone, you know, Iraq, we're bombing, you know, Vietnam, whatever. They kind of just wait and grow and wait and grow. And it's not a terrible strategy.
So they have been doing for thousands of years. And, you know, we are defined by the speed and greed culture, which, you know, we have exported to them. I remember going years ago to the Imperial City, the Forbidden City in Beijing. And like, I was just moved to tears because, you know, I spent my life studying all that, and I get to, they had an art gallery where there was some exhibitions. In fact, if you look right above me there, that horses on the top of the ceiling, that came from that art gallery. Anyway, I noticed that right next to it was a Starbucks in the Imperial City, you know, the seat of the most fantastic tea culture in the world. And they've got a Starbucks and everybody's lined up to have it. So, you know, we attempted to export our speed and greed, hyper-capitalistic stuff to them. And they're just doing it better than we are now. So the whole world is besmirched on account of their aptitude and our foolhardiness.
Yeah, I mean, how do you... As a Taoist, do you recognize the, like, does it seem like Taoism has actually in some way helped the CC, what do they call themselves? CCPR? Is that the Chinese Communist CC? Yeah. Have you?
Well, Chinese Communist CCP. Party, CCP, they don't like to, they use a different acronym. It's like the People's Communist Party or something, but
if they had
there
some, if like I don't know how that would have happened, but just thought experiment, no Taoism, would it even exist, the CCP? Is it the fact that they have absorbed, they must have absorbed in some way so much of that wisdom, is that part of what's making them so powerful?
So this is a really, really cool and interesting question, which nobody else has ever asked me in an interview that I can think of, at least right now. So I'm glad you did ask that. I'll give you this answer, but I'm going to give it to you in the context of, you know, what is personally very difficult and sad for me, because, you know, there's a war against religion going on now, which, as always, is just about, Xi Jinping's fear that spiritual people will rise in power and weaken his regime. He wants social control as the number one thing. He's trying to make a large, sealed North Korea out of China, and he will eventually do it. So I personally have this great suffering and pain in my heart because of how much I love traditional Chinese culture, how much I love to travel there, how many great friends I have there. And because of speaking frankly, as we are doing now, about this subject and writing articles and newsletters and books about all this, you know, any words against the government, according to their security law, the recent one that made such a hullabaloo in Hong Kong, that enables them, it gives them the right in their own eyes, you know, to come to Arizona, snatch me up and take me to jail. And they could do that, Duncan, they could do it if I were on Pluto, according to their own legal system, you know, anywhere I am. So that makes it, you know, not a desirable thing for me to travel there anymore, or to go, to Chinese protectorates like some places in Southeast Asia. Anyway, the answer, which is most fascinating, is that there is an age-old tradition. It really goes back to pre-dynastic China, that is to say, before there was a China, of the Taoist master being the one who whispers in the ear of the ruler. And the Tao Te Ching is full of, you know, be nameless exhortations, crafting an image of the sage as the one who isn't, you know, necessarily, the sage could be the emperor, but in a lot of cases he just whispers in the ear, tells him, you know, what princess his daughter should marry, when he should conduct a military campaign, if at all, which spies to believe. And the emperors that listened to those guys grew their kingdoms and advanced and eventually united China, and the ones that didn't. So you're absolutely spot on. And it's one of the fantastically cool things about Taoist philosophy that, you know, I've engaged for so many years now.
I think it's such a curious, philosophy, and has always infuriated me more than any other one that I've ever tangled with. I'll read the Tao Te Ching to my toddler in the bathtub. He just likes the way the language sounds. It's so funny. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. I read it to them and they listen, but they don't know what it means. And they'll say, "What does that mean?" And I'm like, "Don't ask me. I don't know. I don't know." But it's so beautiful. And yet it's just so infuriating because I can't get my hands around it at all. And then that makes me feel depraved or something, like I should be able to.
I will send you later some recommendations of translations and other things. And you should probably read, you might think about reading the Zhuangzi, because it's storytelling, you know. There's a lot of the same messages, but they're funny little stories, you know, like Butcher Ding, who never needs to sharpen his knife. And a lot of the same concepts are there, but kids can connect to them.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Would you mind just giving us a before we go further, a working definition of Taoism?
It's like asking me, like, what is, beside manic murder monkeys, what exactly is a human being? Or asking me, can you just, you know, briefly explain gravity?
Yeah.
It's a question that scholars, and I am not one by any means, I'm too ADD and not smart enough, but scholars have struggled with this for a really long time. What I can try to do is tell you that it's a very complex phenomenon that brings together history, culture, philosophy, religion, belief only in the observation purely of nature, but also with a bunch of animism and shamanism thrown in. And it's all mixed up in a blender, and it comes out as a thing that is quite porous, permeable, so that it is able to go like one of those mycelia that grows, you know, and it occupies acres and acres, is like the hugest living thing, but it's under the ground, you don't really see it, but it connects everything. And that description really makes it so endlessly fun to study, and as you say, totally infuriating.
Just infuriating.
Sometimes I feel that way. Most of the time I'm laughing and just amazed at the fact that it really is, in the end, nothing more at its core, the little seedlet, the little embryo in the middle of it, is nothing more than a really studious, patient, long view observation about the way nature works. So you asked me about, you know, Taoism and contributing to China's success, and I told you about the whispering in the ear. So how about this for an example? This is one I made up, but I've used it in some talks and people like it. It's like Lao Tzu, you know, possibly fictional character, or maybe like Moses or Jesus, an amalgam of people that really lived that were turned into a legend or something for instructive purposes. You know, Chinese culture has such a history of ancestor worship that if you want to attribute and give something some gravitas, you attribute it to an ancestor. So Lao Tzu just means the old boy or the old master. So, you know, there's a bunch of guys sitting in a coffee klatch, well, let's say a tea klatch, and, you know, they come up with some wise things, but they don't want to attribute it to themselves because right. who the hell are they? So they say, well, you know, the old master said, and so, you know, it's very possible that there was an old guy or there was an old guy, but it doesn't really matter because it's clear there were several authors of that book. Anyway, and Matt, let's say for the moment, just for the fun of it, that the, you know, that the putative Lhasa, a librarian in the Zhou dynasty, gets summoned by the emperor one day, and the emperor says, listen, Lhasa, my wizard, long before Harry Potter, you know, my wizard, I got some news from spies that someone is going to attack, but I don't have enough army to like cover the entire perimeter of the country. I don't know where they're coming from, north, south, east, west. I don't know where to put the troops to save the kingdom. If I screw up, all could be lost. If I intercept at the right place, wherever that might be, we could save everything. Just tell me, where are they coming from? And Laz is like, oh, shit, how do I know where they're coming from? He says, your imperial son of heaven, give me a couple hours to think on this. So he goes off to the, he goes off and he stands under his favorite, you know, tree by the river, and he does a little meditation. And while he's meditating, he watches the river flowing. Just through slit eyes, he watches the river. And suddenly he notices that there's some little glinting stuff in the sand of the river, like what we would call mica, right? Remember that, like the shiny little stuff. And he happens to know, because he watches the river all the time, that mica derives from some rocks that are up at the very top of the mountains that feed the river. And that if he's seeing that mica now, months early, this means that the snowpack that feeds the river is melting. And it shouldn't be melting because it's only February, right. say. And if the snowpack is melting, that leads to an opportunity for enemies to come through a mountain pass that would ordinarily be unpassable and make right. a sneak attack. So he goes back to the emperor and says, you know, sire, son of heaven, your greatness, your holiness, put some troops up at the north pass, make an ambush. That's where they're going to come. And the, you know, the king says, are you sure? Like, be damn sure, because it's your head. And Lhasa says, yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. He says, no, I'm sure. Send them. And they come through, you know, on schedule, and it's a rout. Kingdom is saved, and Lhasa's elevated to the second most powerful guy in the kingdom. So this nature watching, and by nature, I don't just mean the river, of course. I mean the heavens, the seasons, the little internecine wars between ants, you know, all that stuff, how it all works informs everything that we know. And in modern science, it does that also. And Taoists were ancient scientists. And some things we know better than they do now. We understand more in more detail. And other things, they still kind of have an edge.
So this is sort of the as above, so below idea. In small things, all things. If you can... By watching any part of the natural world, from that you can extrapolate everything else. This is the apple falling. Now you know. Now just from that you can understand how like planets orbit around the sun, just from this form of extrapolation. And then also what I think is really interesting about it is this idea that the natural world doesn't just, it's not a way for you to calculate other things in the natural world. But because humanity is part of the natural world, from watching these things, you can actually formulate how human societies behave. So is the in the Tao Te Ching, when it's sort of talking about the how when things start malfunctioning, what you can expect when things start malfunctioning. How did Lao Tzu come to that? From watching entropy? From watching the way ice melts or trees catch on fire? How did he reach that conclusion? You know what I'm talking about? Like, here's like when the king, it's so many various warnings or signs when stuff is going wrong. Here's what you can expect. Because if the moment, didn't he say the moment there's an emperor? or a leader, the moment there we even know of a king, things have already kind of started fucking up.
So you've given me, you know, like 10 different questions, and they're all good. They're all good. Let me, I didn't, I neglected my smart cap, but I'll do what I can with it. So first of all, the as above, so below, let's start there. You actually touched on kind of a more accurate version of that when you said, when you mentioned that all things are connected. So the essence of everything, understanding, predicting, repairing, rebalancing, reharmonizing, all of it, the essence of everything is predicated on this non-dual idea, which is very un-Western, honestly. At least through the time of Descartes and in modern science, until quantum mechanics and things began to change how we looked at it, and we realized that the Taoists were right. Yeah. but we went on our own thing, you know, for a couple thousand years anyway. The idea that it is all, everything we can conceive of and perceive and imagine is all one thing. So I belong to a little app called Next Door.
I got kicked off that,
but it's like, you know, for my hood. And honestly, I don't do social media and I don't spend a lot of time. I have a little Instagram that I go to sometimes, but honestly, that's not so much for me. So I don't go on this thing very much. But I live in the mountains of Arizona where there's a high fire danger. And so I started doing that app when we had a really bad fire here and people were losing their homes and I had to keep track, you know, like I could rely on my neighbors who said, you know, the fire's in my backyard more than the county or a map, right? So anyway, I start looking at that. This morning there was a post about somebody found a spider in their house and all these people were talking about how to kill it, spray it, smash it, squish it. And you know, it was a harmless spider, a wolf spider. It looks kind of imposing, but really it's just eating the roaches and other things in your house. You know, it's not worth, other than saying good morning to it, there's nothing really to do. And anyway, I wrote a little line or two about what a wonderful opportunity to exercise, you know, awareness and compassion, recognize that that little spider is part of the exact same fabric that makes you. It's another finger in a glove animated by the same hand that moves you. It's all the same thing. And, you know, if you kill it, you damage that fabric and you damage you because it's all one thing. Being able to perceive that, like on an ongoing basis, is called, you know, in the vernacular for us, waking up. Right. And we don't use, I mean, there are things that are good about the word enlightened and things that aren't really so great about it. But, and I always get nervous about it. It's not a Taoist word. It's more of a Buddhist word, but it doesn't really exist. Strictly speaking, it's not in Buddhism either. It was applied to lamas by some Germans or something, I think. I can't even remember anymore. But anyway, just on a little by little basis, trying to hold the perception of that connection between all things is kind of at the root of Taoism. Because once you have that perception, you can see well in advance of what others may see, where imbalances and disharmonies are going to occur, where the pendulum has swung all the way to a terrible place because it was at the opposite terrible place and now has to come back to center. And if you have this view and this kind of understanding, then, you know, when the guy flips you off because you didn't, you know, leap forward in your 500 horsepower vehicle in the first nanosecond that the light turned green, and he's got to, you know, meet his mistress and she's waiting. He gives you the finger, and rather than, you know, lowering your window and you know, giving him a double, say, or you know, exercising your lips with it or something. You just go, hey, that's his mind. I'm looking at an unbalanced mind. It's part of something bigger, and you wave and he goes by in a rush and you continue on your way. This kind of cultivation is sort of what I hope is an answer to at least some of the
things you asked. Yes, thank you. That's a great, it's a wonderful answer. And one of the curious things about being in a technological society with all the hyperconnectivity that is being shown through Nextdoor apps or Instagram or whatever, is that somehow interpersonally people don't seem to be aware of this at all. You see the telephone wires and you see all the wires around you, and you know all your followers and your likes and your tweets. You see we're so connected, and yet why many people, it seems like, have a sense of being completely disconnected from this web that you're talking about. And if there is a sense of connection, it certainly isn't a benevolent sense of connection, but more like a feeling of being ensnared or trapped, angry, like locked into the damn thing, inexorably stuck. So how does Taoism approach that suffering?
You lead me yet again to, for which I thank you, to a very juicy subject. So the way we cancerous manic murder monkeys are treating each other and the planet is not headed for a good ending. We are, you know, pushing the known universe, you know, our world anyway, our planet, into such an extreme position that the forces of nature, you could call it, you know, if you wish, you could anthropomorphize this and say, you know, Mother Earth is going to fight back, you know, whatever metaphor you want to use. But things to control the grotesque overgrowth of human populations require that human lives be taken, that, you know, the cancer be cut out in order for the organism to survive. Balance and harmony will restore whatever we do to destroy that balance and harmony will eventually be corrected whether we like it or not, and I promise you we're not going to like it, right? So whether it's pandemics, global thermonuclear war, other things, the Earth in some form, perhaps not, I'm very greatly saddened and aggrieved to say not in the form of the biodiverse wonder that we call Earth now, but in some version, whether it's tortoises and cockroaches or all that's left, you know, it will survive us. And come back to some kind of balance, and then evolution will start anew. Some people talk about evolution as being another word for Tao.
Huh.
I don't say the Tao, because the Tao implies a thing, right? So it's not a thing any more than evolution is a thing. But this force is inexorable, and we made a lot of mistakes, and like a lot of other species, in fact, the great, great, great species that have ever been on this planet are gone.
Right.
You know, they were experiments or manifestations of evolution that didn't work out. Why did they not work out? I don't know. An asteroid hit. The Earth tilted a little bit and it got too cold. Cancerous thing arose, like people, and started killing everybody else, and then a lot of species died, and it started off again. I mean, this is just the way the whole thing goes. So, you know, we made our first really huge mistake was to leave the hunting and gathering lifestyle, which has as mischaracterized as being short, brutish, and nasty. Now, more better. Anthropology says now that we were all living till 80 without a hint of disease in our bones or anything, you know. And did the occasional tiger get us? Yes, but not as often as the drunk driver or the Mack truck. And And did we occasionally get diseases, and did we have a bad winter where only a few survived? Yeah, exactly like what's going on now. But, you know, when we went to agriculture, we went to, that's Duncan's, and this is mine. I'm going to live a penurious, I'm going to use this penurious diet of four things that I can grow. Forget all the abundance of everything that I evolved to need, from berries and nuts to herbs and all the other stuff that make me healthy. Forget that. I'm going to make my, don't you come here.
Yeah.
That line in the dirt is this is mine and that's yours. We started all that. And then we made other terrible mistakes, industrialization and now virtual stuff and the digital world. And all that does is compound our initial errors and speed us up. So the tech you referred to, all it does is make everything happen faster. The same crappy decisions, the same alienation, the same poor choices, they're all there as they were before, but they're just faster, that's all.
Okay, right. So it's like technology is like an apocalyptic lubricant or something. It's just, it's not solving the what we are hoping that it would solve. I want to go jump back to what you were saying about population control, which is obviously a very controversial subject that if you bring it up in the wrong way, people will accuse you of being part of the New World Order or some kind of globalist agenda to depopulate the planet. They talk about the Georgia Guidestones. I don't know if you're aware of them, but they're these, you know, someone carved like keep human population under this amount. To me, what's interesting about the conversation about depopulation is what you're saying, which is how do you want the depopulation to happen? Do you want it to happen through chaos, or do you want it to happen through some other way, a human way or whatever? Because no matter what, you can be certain that when things get out of balance enough, depopulation is going to happen. It's there's no way around it. When things get, just like what you're saying, when you get war, it's not just like you get war. War is followed by famine. War is followed by disease. You know, whenever things get really wonky, lots and lots and lots of people die. And right now it seems like the compassionate idea is like, let the earth decide who to kill via complete ecological collapse, because nobody wants to be in charge of like saying how many kids you can have. I mean, someone did. We were talking about them earlier, you know, the CCP. But so what are your thoughts on that? Like, how is Tao? How would, if Lao Tzu did exist and somehow we reanimate him using an artificial intelligent bot perfectly, what would he say that we're supposed to do to handle this problem of a massive, exponentially accelerating human population or an imbalance in human population and resources?
If I asked him, he would probably look at me and say, you know, silly foreigner. Why do you worry about this kind of stuff? And you know, change is, you know, is the only constant. The question really is, well, the answer, I think, is two tines on a little fork. The first tine is to say, look, if we've just had this discussion about technology and how all it does is magnify our foibles and put us in more and more and more extreme situations, because we have not done, because of that wrong turn we took in the Neolithic, maybe even in the Paleolithic, but let's say in the Neolithic, because of that wrong turn we took, all we have done is added an amplifier to our mistakes. And we keep on using the amplifier to try to fix those mistakes, right? So the more we have discussions about, shall we be like Charlton Heston and Soylent Green and, you know, eating people in little cubes and, you know, and line up to die in a little gas chamber because we got to 30 years old or whatever it was. So, you know, asking these kinds of questions begs the point that all of that kind of solution, so-called solution, is exactly what got us here. And as you just said, right. Nature is going to do what it's going to do, and it will always win. Right. Because, you know, it's just us plus, you know, 1,000 times more wisdom and understanding. Okay, so that's one tine. The other tine of the fork is that what might be a solution to this? And I was very interested, actually, to hear Dr. Weil mention in that recent interview with you, the idea that, psychedelics have a role in what I have been writing and speaking about now for 25 years, I guess, which is a leap, an evolutionary leap in our consciousness, which in very rapid time frame changes the way we see who we are, what we are, how we connect to other people, how we connect to all living things, how we connect to the entire web of sentient beings, even if it's on some planet in Alpha Centauri somewhere, right? That if we could have, and evolution shows that sometimes, whether it's the evolution of a thumb or a bipedal gait that suddenly brings us up and now we have eyes in the front, we're looking at the veldt in a way that we were before, we were looking at the ground. Oh, there's an apple.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at, oh, look miles away, there's a lion, run, right? So we have a whole different view of things. That, I believe in the possibility of this kind of, whether it's epigenetics or some other intervention of some sort, I believe in the possibility, in fact, I believe in the necessity that we have a leap of this kind of understanding that will just fundamentally shift our behavior. And that leap will not come from technology, although it might come from ayahuasca. So that I don't know. I'm not an expert in hallucinogens because I've been more of a meditator in this life, but I do believe that this is the only answer. You know, when you have a double bind, the only way out of it is to comment upon it.
Huh.
You know, you're stuck either way you turn. Right. But if you lift yourself and have the perspective of seeing actually, oh, I'm in a double bind, I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't, then all of a sudden you're in a different place to find solutions.
Right. You mean like, you mean like the acknowledgement of the sort of trapped state.
Yeah, so maybe instead of social media, and I'm guilty of this. I have this little dog, that I'm just, I was really, really sick last fall and was in a coma for a while. And when I woke up, the first thing I said to my wife by my bedside was, I want a Kerry Blue Terrier. She looked at me like, the ambulance brings you to the hospital dead. They revive you. You've been unconscious for a long time, been sitting here all this time. You wake up and that's the first thing you say. You talk about a puppy. Do you not remember that we have four dogs? Would you like to open a kennel? And I said, yes, I know it's a terrible idea, but I want a Kerry Blue Terrier. She looks it up on her phone. She says, that's an Irish dog. They don't even have them here. And I said, look on the AKC website. They've got it. Anyway, long story short, she finds one. Like, there's one in the United States. There's a litter of six, and five are already sold, and there's one. And I end up getting this dog. And I got this thing for this little dog. And, it's in no way rational. I like my other four dogs, too, all little rat dogs.
Yeah.
And, I like them. But I put them up. I put pictures of this one little rat, this one that I thought of in my stupor. I put it up on social media. The digression is simply about, instead of using social media for that, and I just admitted that I put up like five or six pictures of that dog, we have to have a shift on what are we doing with that tool? And if all we're doing is the more or less the worst or the most trivial of us, and I'm not suggesting that loving your dog is trivial. Loving my dog makes my life a lot better, and it is a path to loving nature. So probably I picked a bad example, but you get the point. There are better things to do.
Sure.
With these technologies but they have to be informed by a mind that sees and understands what's really going on.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
There are better things to do.
Sure.
With these technologies. But they have to be informed by a mind that sees and understands what's really going on. Otherwise, it's just a Bowie knife in the hand of a 2-year-old.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's a Bowie knife that is like in the hand of a 2-year-old that is transforming in from a Bowie knife into a gun, into an assault rifle, into a nuclear weapon. It's growing in front of us. I just saw this. I think Musk just retweeted someone saying that 56% of interaction with social media is bots. It's not even humans. Like, it's artificial intelligence bots that are just swarming and putting their whatever their various agendas are into human culture. And to me, that's where it's, look, I like that you think that there is some solution or there's a possibility. And I love that you mentioned these things that do happen for sure to creatures. All of a sudden you've got an eye. All of a sudden you can see what used to be just whatever non-visionary existence for a fish was. Now you're starting to see a coral reef. Now you're starting, it transforms things. And I imagine that transformation is very quick. So that to me, there's that it's nice to hear you propose that maybe psychedelics could be one of the things that cause that would cause that transformation. But good Lord, I just don't buy it. I just feel like, you know, I've been around enough megalomaniacal psychonauts, people who've been taking these substances where they're like, yeah, this will dissolve your ego. And their like ego is only amplified by a trillion from whatever the thing is, you know, to the point where it's like, I used to believe that when people would talk about the hippies putting acid in the water supply, I'd be like, well, why not give it a shot? But now I'm afraid, I don't know that would work necessarily. I don't know if that's one of the paths.
I'm not a devotee or a practitioner of any of that. I only mentioned it more because, not because I believe in psychedelics having that power, but and you know that was Dr. Weil's thing, but more because I like to hear people talking about the necessity for that particular kind of shift in consciousness as a solution, and maybe the only solution to where we are. you know, massive global rebalancing that could happen. And, you know, I think I have to, why did I become a Taoist monk, you know?
Yeah, why?
I just released a memoir. We can talk more about it, but, you know, it traces my childhood from, you know, a privileged family in Manhattan, you know, to making all these choices that led me to become, you know, a lay monk, at least now. I can't go back to monastery so much, but... And maybe there's a little seed of seeker in me and in other people, that there's some portion of the population that just understands this stuff. You may be one of those people. And so, you know, you just look aghast at so many things that happen. And if you have a practice like Taoism, which is, you know, I think pick your poison, you know, that's the one that appealed to me, yeah. But, you know, but... if you have a practice, then what you can do is you can use the practice to enhance and strengthen, number one, your ability to stand against the weapons of mass distraction that are manipulating you, whether they are media or corporate interests or all that stuff that affects how you see the world, what you buy, how you spend your time. You can fight back against that, not you know, with AR-15s, but fight back against it with awareness that, oh, you know what? I actually don't really believe that. And I don't really want to be manipulated that way. And I would like to look for some higher, better ways to live and better ideas than the ones that, you know, represent American anti-culture right now. You know, a violent, imperial place. So I think, you know, the role of practice is important. Without it, I'm not really sure what I would read. You know, I choose to read as opposed to watch, you know, streaming or television or anything. I choose to read because it gives me space.
Right.
And all these practices, whether they're meditation, you know, Tai Chi and Qigong, which I enjoy, you know, these things give me space that in which I can make decisions, right? So change is one thing. We agree, I think, that, you know, it's inevitable, going to happen. Doesn't matter whether we like it. Not relevant, because it's not about us. Nothing is about us. But that simple sentence, it's not about you, is like the least popular thing. My publishers always scream at me for, why don't you write a book about it? It is all about you, because the Tao Te Ching says you got to work on yourself first and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, we're already too masturbatory and we're too self-indulgent and entitled and narcissistic. We don't need any more books about, you know, how to entitle yourself to a Rolls Royce and a big house and all. It's not about you at all. And that message by itself seems to be so unpalatable to so many people, you know, that I get ugly mail sometimes.
Oh, people don't want to hear that.
Yeah. So, without the practice, there is no space to interpret and handle those incoming things and find, you know, a higher way of looking at your life. So that's why I'm such a lazy bastard. I would lie around. Oh, dude, I would lie around and watch wuxia movies. You know, I'd watch Chinese kung fu movies all day long, play with my dog, you know, have some tea, watch some more movie. I'm such a lazy bastard. The only reason that I've persisted in all these things to achieve something with them is because the other choice is not acceptable. Really lying around is not really a very good way to live. So I do these things because I must.
What are the things? What are the things? What does a Taoist practice look like?
So those are some of the things I mentioned. I do a lot of Taoist meditation. When I've been very sick, I haven't been able to stand for long periods of time like I used to, but I hope to get back to that. You know, there are some guys, I shouldn't say guys, there's some people in China, and my own master seems to think that there's still, you know, some of these like druids, you know, hiding in the forest somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, China's a really big country. But, you know, that they spend 6 hours, 4 to 10 a.m., say, every day, standing with their arms like this, hugging a tree, motionless, you know, developing their chi. Yeah, 6 hours.
Wow.
Dude, let me tell you, I've been through a period in my life where I did 3 hours a day, and I cannot imagine. You might say, well, you could do three, you could do six.
You mean 3 hours?
Not
with, 3 hours with your arms wrapped around a tree?
Yeah, sometimes my arms got tired, I put them down.
Wow.
I was still standing there, I put them back up. But you know, that was that's sort of my physical.
What is that like? Wait, what is that? What is hour two like as you're doing that? What can you do? What happens? I have never in my life heard of that form of meditation before, but it makes me want to go run to the closest tree and try that.
So first of all, the posture. There are several different postures. They're not all the tree hugging. There's one where you fold your hands over your navel, another where your hands are by your sides with your middle fingers going to an acupuncture meridian. There are at least three different postures and probably more. But the standing part, as opposed to the sitting or the lying versions, which are also legit, because, you know, not everybody is strong enough. I'm no longer strong enough. You know, I got sick, so
yeah.
I can't do that anymore. I'm trying to work my way back to it. I don't know that I'll ever be able to do 3 hours again. But why stand, say, in the first place? You know, we have this, it comes from Chinese medicine, although Chinese medicine itself is a very Taoist thing. So we don't want to get into the chicken or egg thing. We'll be here all day. But let's just say that Chinese medicine is an expression of this idea that there's something called the greater heavenly circle. Your energy circles up your back and down your front end.
Yeah.
And, you know, all Taoist practices engage this. Some engage only your torso. So then it's called the lesser heavenly circle. It goes from, let's say, your groin to the top of your head. And at the top of your head, there's a point, Pai Hui, which is your yang point. It's at the crown of your head. And, you know, you have the idea that this someday after, you know, enough of this, you will open a connection to heaven, to pure yang. Actually, the temple in which I was ordained a monk and then a priest is named for this idea of pure yang. It's called the pure yang temple, but that's kind of like celestial heaven, you know, everything awakening.
Yes.
But if you remember that it's a circle, there's that yang going to heaven, but there's also this idea of connecting with the earth through points in your feet, kidney acupuncture point one, kidney one, yong quan it's called. And so you're suspended between heaven and earth because that is man's place. The idea of being suspended between heaven and earth does put people and our consciousness in a little bit different place. And sometimes, honestly, I wrestle a bit with that. But anyway, the meditation thing, it's just to increase the strength of circulation of that circle, connect you more with heaven and earth, make you physically and energetically stronger. And those amazing people, I started to say lunatics, but I caught myself. Those amazing people who I so greatly admire and want to be when I grow up, who can, you know, stand like that for 6 hours, what they do, having achieved that ability to stand like that and made themselves so awake and so strong, is they heal. They go off and heal people with that energy. And they are healers, and that's their work, is to do the standing to become powerful enough to heal.
Whoa.
Because, you know, the first treasure of Taoism is compassion.
Whoa.
So can you imagine if we had a world of people who thought like that, instead of, how about a tactical nuke? That'll solve the problem real quick.
Tactical nuke? That's the that's one of the most hilarious terms maybe that humans have burped out in our history. Tactical nuke?
You're killing me.
This is how we know there's a Satan. You might not believe in God, but you know that that's a meeting where, like, Satan appears. It's like, listen, it's a tactical nuke. We're going to do precision nuclear weapons. It's going to be a mild, it's like a party nuke. It's just,
you know, what is a precision nuclear weapon? A precision nuclear weapon is is a medical technique that kills a cancer without killing the rest of you.
Yeah.
That should be the beginning and the end of any kind of tactical. Yeah.
No.
That I will accept as a tactical nuke.
Yeah.
The rest.
Please. No. Never. Whoever said that, I remember when the warmonger started throwing that out there to try to loosen us up. You're a little uptight when it comes to nuclear weapons, humanity. Can't you just relax a little bit? Can't you? Hey, but what is going on? What you are so... What's going on with you physiologically? What is your sickness? What is happening?
Oh, yeah. So about that, you know, some people say, well, you know, if you do all these practices and you still get sick, like doesn't speak very well for your practice.
Who says that?
And some people do. And the answer is very simple, you know. Without the practices, I wouldn't get sick. I would get dead.
Yeah. Listen, I have to...
Get sick, practice and get sick, don't practice and get dead. Very simple.
When I heard that I was going to be interviewing someone who was sick, possibly dying, and also who had COVID today, I did not expect to see someone who seems to be far healthier than I currently am. As a dad, you're glowing. You seem, you know, and that's not blowing smoke. And you know, my teachers have actually taught me that telling someone that they're like looking great when they're dying is actually kind of the most rotten thing you can do. But you seem fine. What's going on with you? Is it cancer? Is it?
Yeah. So a few years ago, I moved here to Arizona from South Florida, where I had lived for many years. I had initially moved there for my wife's job, and she had moved years before to Hollywood for me when I was a screenwriter, and you know, I couldn't do that anywhere else. So, you know, she moved there, and we lived in California for a while. So I returned the favor, and we moved to Florida for her corporate thing, which turned out to be really, really a wonderful career for her. And I was happy to do it. And as it turned out, I met my primary master, and like it was a really wonderful quarter century there. And I developed quite a large school, you know, one of the larger Taiji schools in the country. And, you know, really I succeeded there and grew there. And I'm very grateful for that time. But I also saw, you know, South Florida became kind of a hot New York, and I don't know, you know, I had a house on the beach. I was fortunate enough to have a house on the beach, but, you know, the ocean was in our living room from time to time when a big moon or a storm came. And I thought, you know, this is my single largest investment. I don't want to leave it to my son, who, by the way, is an evolutionary biologist and will probably be rolling his eyes at my characterizations of evolution. But, he just graduated from Yale. I'm so proud of him.
Wow.
Anyway, he's eclipsing his dad already, and I hope he continues to do so and more. And so I didn't want to leave him a scuba diving adventure. So, you know, we cashed out and we moved here to Arizona. I spent some time looking around. I wanted to live in Asia, which I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are so many things politically, and my wife didn't want to do that when the kid was still in school. So we got here to Arizona, and within the first year of moving here, I contracted something called valley fever, which is a fungal disease, a little fungus that lives in the soil. And many, many, many people, hundreds of thousands of people get this disease.
Yes.
And it typically, either you don't know you got it, you know, your immune system kicks it out, or you feel like you're sick for a week and have a cold.
Never heard of it.
It enters in the lungs. It's coccidioides is the fungus. Anyway, some people, you know, get some nodules in the lungs, and then it's diagnosed if they have a chest x-ray, which is what happened to me. Some people, the fungus disseminates throughout the body, so it could go to other places. Typical places, the skin, it creates lesions. There are medications for it, and a class of medication. But they're kind of, in most cases, you take the medication and that's it. it doesn't necessarily totally kill the fungus, but it kind of puts it to sleep, like being some cancerous remission sort of thing. But, you know, you don't really get it again. You know, you've developed antibodies to it. And yeah, that's that. So in my case, unfortunately, I am one of the tiny, 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 thankfully, number of people who had the misfortune for the fungus to reach my brain.
Oh.
And it went all over me. I had problems with my heart from it, my kidneys, my prostate, my lungs. It just really took me over. And I don't have a weak immune system, but perhaps genetically, not really clear why, but it really, when it ended up in my brain, that unfortunately is not a curable. I mean, that's a fatal condition. So I took the drugs that, you know, were supposed to slow down its progress. And, you know, like cancer chemo, sometimes used for this, it's not a pleasant experience to try to prolong your life taking those things.
Right.
You know, they reduce your quality of life greatly. And I had trouble tolerating them. And I'll spare you the details, but let's just say it was very rough.
Yeah.
So there's an experimental medication which was developed by a company in England. Some medical entrepreneurs saw that climate change, and this connects to everything we're talking about, right? Climate change has caused these tropicopolitan fungi that are to be found in Southeast Asia, South America, Africa. You know, the humidity and changing temperature has a lot of these fungi growing and infecting more and more people. Oh. And many people die undiagnosed around the world from these things. And this group said, you know, in the short, maybe not in the short term, but at least in the medium term, this is going to become a global health problem. And we want to develop a drug that works against a wide range of these fungi. And, you know, then we'll become trillionaires and, you know, help a lot of people. So, you know, I got on a clinical trial of this drug, which is, I will say, much easier to tolerate than the previous medications. Whether or not it is a cure, which is to say, whether it doesn't just stop the fungus from fucking, but stops the fungus dead. Right?
Yeah.
That is as yet unknown because it's too new.
Right.
And I was feeling a lot better. And I asked the doc who's running this thing, I said, you know, could I stop now? Because like, I feel pretty good. He says, you could. And it would be very helpful for us in the study to know if you did, because on autopsy, we'll have to see whether, you know, whether your body looks like a farmer's market, you know.
Holy shit.
And I said, okay, all right, thank you very much for that. And he has a great sense of humor, and he's just the greatest guy. He saved my life, of course.
Yeah.
But you know, he was giving me the sign that, like, you know, stay on this stuff.
Right.
Until we're really sure that it's a cure. So, you know, that's where I am. And I went to my son's graduation. I got COVID up in Connecticut. And honestly, I had four vaccines, and, you know, they gave me the antiviral stuff. And I don't know, Duncan, all I can say is I'm very lucky. And compared to what I've been through in the last 2 years of my life, this is a snore. And it's not a snore for a lot of people.
Right.
It's very, very serious. But I'm just, you know, I just lucked out. So
yeah, you just lucked out.
Taken as an endorsement.
You didn't luck out. It's this hugging tree thing. It's the chi. You're glowing with it. I've seen this before in other people. They glow. You've got this, you're glowing. It's not just I don't know what it is. Who am I to say? I'm just some podcaster. But yeah, no, it's, first of all, I don't mean to just jump back to this, but if anyone online or anyone has said that bullshit to you about your spiritual practice is not great because you're getting sick. What do they think, we're immortal? It happens to everybody. There's no way out of it. No, so that's bullshit. But number two, I'm so happy to hear this experimental medication is working.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a Taoist thing, like a Buddhist thing, not to get too attached.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's difficult when it's your life, obviously.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want, like, I want to be attached. Oh, I'm attached. keep me alive. I'm loving the attachment. But, you know, it could stop working. It could turn out to kill me and some others, destroy my liver in a year. I mean, you know, anything. It's an experiment.
We've only been talking for an hour. I'm attached to you. This has got to work. Seriously. You want to talk about a weak practice? Now, we can't so lose funny. You. You got to stick around. I mean, especially now that that must have been, I can't even imagine what that's like sitting at your son's graduation at Yale. And no.
Yeah, I was very weepy. I was very weepy, I'll tell you.
Did you know that?
I was super weepy.
Do you have a second longer to talk? We've already talked for an hour. It seems like it went by in a second.
I'll talk as long as you wish. I'm enjoying
it. Is this the dog?
This is my baby.
Oh, wow.
This is Mimi.
Oh, that is a beautiful dog. Mimi.
She's about to go for a haircut. Mimi. Her name is Yoemi after a character in a novel I wrote. But Mimi is easier, so we just call her Mimi. She's daddy's baby. She knows it. Everybody knows it. I get a lot of ridicule for her.
I want to talk more about the dog, but I've got Taoist questions I want to ask. And
yeah,
okay,
sure.
I'll Google that breed of dog. But I gotta know. Your master says that these beings living in the forest, hugging the trees for 6 hours, and also the Lao Tzu amalgam has always fascinated me because just of exactly what your master said. They say the same thing about Pythagoras, you know, that what there wasn't a Pythagoras. Pythagoras represented some unknown community of people. Lao Tzu represents some unknown community of people. And especially with Taoism in particular, as opposed to some of the other religions that I'm familiar with, centralized religions, you have this concept of the anonymous sage who is basically like moving the gears of society. And when I am becoming despondent from overindulgence in the news or whatever I'm freaking myself out by watching, I fantasize that those beings are active and are influencing things in the most compassionate way possible, that they still whisper in the ears of people, that they're still out there and they're still doing their job, that's nothing's changed at all. So that's a big lead up to a probably annoying question. Have you ever encountered one of them? Have you ever encountered one of these people, one of the invisible, whatever you want to call them, the masters? Gurdjieff had names for them. Have you ever rubbed shoulders with them or rubbed shoulders with anyone who claims to have met one of them?
So, you know, as usual, your questions bring up a bunch of stuff, but that's what makes you a good interviewer. So look, I'm going to sidestep it for a moment.
Okay.
I'll come back to it. I'm going to sidestep it for a moment and remind you of the multiverse, right? So I think it's very congruent with Taoist beliefs, although, you know, archetypal, traditional, really strict Taoist beliefs. And by the way, I mentioned that this was a complex and porous phenomenon we call Taoism. So I would never say, ever, ever, that I'm an expert in all that.
Right.
There are Chinese texts I cannot read because my comprehension is too low. There are things that are not translated, they're not available, you can't trust the translator, blah, blah, blah. There's just a zillion things from thousands of years of culture. So I can't make an absolute statement, but I would say that the idea of multiverses is congruent with a lot of things that I understand about Taoism, and that the idea that there are levels of things. And please remember, this is something that not a lot of people really talk about when they talk about Taoism, because they talk about, you know, the Tai Chi Tu, the little yin-yang symbol being on the back of, you know, a surfer's, you know, Toyota pickup or something on the way to the beach.
I have one tattooed right above my ass.
That and also Star Wars, which is, you know, Lucas was fascinated with the interplay between Taoism and Confucianism, and that provided all that grist for that mill, that whole stuff. So, but what people don't talk about so much is the fact that, you know, there are shamanistic practices all around the world. And, you know, this is an ancillary, is in some ancillary way connected to the question of the hallucinogens that many of them, but not all of them, use. And these people do their practices, whether they're chanting or dancing or smoking something or eating something. And what they all come up with in the end is sort of the same vision. Even though they're spread all around the world, and arguments have been made that, well, they all started from some proto-shamanistic ancestor, and so that, you know, these visions are all from the same Mother Mary shamaness, you know, 100,000 years ago. I don't know about that, but what I can say is that whether it's in Mongolia or Olazan Basin, you know, you take a trip and what you see is remarkably the same, and that is, you know, in some way, I'm going to rough this.
Okay.
Because I'm not an Amazonian shaman. But you could think of like a bunch of frisbees connected by a big pencil that goes right through the middle. And there are all these different levels. And, you know, if you are, if you go to the medicine man, the shaman, the shamaness, and you say, look, I've really got a bad belly and I can't, you know, nothing seems to help. And then, you know, the shaman entrances and goes up, you know, four or five frisbees, and there it finds, you know, the tiger gnawing on Duncan's belly.
Yeah.
It says, listen, humbly request, oh mighty tiger, and don't eat me for asking, but could I give you this little bit of raw instead? And could you please stop gnawing on Duncan's belly?
Please.
And, you know, the tiger takes the raw, you know, doggy chew from you and wanders off into the forest. And you come back to the real world and your pain is gone.
Right.
No more bellyache for Duncan.
Yeah.
So this kind of universality to perceptions of reality upon deep meditation or mind altering through substances is a lot more congruent globally than people really talk much about. And a lot of Taoism Taoism has very strong shamanistic roots, is the sentence I was trying to
painfully. Yes.
So what you see, what you experience, whether it's in an altered state, whether you're in meditation, or whether it's in something as prosaic as Tai Chi walking practice in the forest, where you repetitively, by repetitive movement, create a state of mind which quiets impulses and leaves some space for you to see things better. I believe that many, many people have accessed little bits and pieces of these other metaverses or these spirit guides or whatever people like to call them. I can say that the best, strongest experience I've had in that regard, and I'm not going to mention, you know, a zillion little things that came and went during so many decades of meditation now, and tens of thousands of hours, but rather that in that recent illness in September, you know, when my wife found me, you know, on the floor and gone, and she called 911 and they got there fast enough to save me, revive me. I can't tell you, I know what they did, but I would presume, you know, extreme things to bring me back. You know, when I arrived at the ER, I was conscious. And there was a doctor, I remember his face very well, a Jewish guy who was wearing a skull cap, a kippah, and a yarmulke, and he had thick glasses, and he was wearing his mask. And, you know, I looked up, and I said to him, you know, in Yiddish, I said, you know, so how am I, you know? And he said, I'm not going to lie, you know, It's not good.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna do what I can, but you know, your kidneys have shut down, and you know, a lot of your organs are not working, and I don't know, but I'm gonna try. And I said, thank you. Please do. But I want to tell you something. I've spent most of the summer wishing to be dead. I've had so much suffering, and I've been through so much that I'm really, and I'm a monk, and I, you know, I spend a lot of time in consideration of such things. And I am not strongly resistant to dying. I'm kind of 50-50 right at this moment, and I have been for a little while. So please do your best. But if you don't succeed, please don't let me be one of those patients that makes you, you know, that wakes you up tonight in the middle of the night going, damn, you know, I lost that guy.
Wow.
I said, because it's okay. It's okay. Do your best. But please know that I'm perfectly fine with whatever happens. And he thanked me for saying that. And I said, I do have one, you know, other small request, and I felt myself fading, you know. I said, I'm pretty sure that my wife followed the ambulance, just knowing how she is, and that she's going to burst in here any minute. And if I'm dying, I don't want her to hear me screaming and dying. So could you make sure that, you know, I don't want to die in agony. Can you make sure that, you know, that doesn't happen?
Wow.
And he held my hand and he said, I got you, bro.
Wow.
And that's the last thing I remember. And then I was out for a few days. And when I was gone, and this is the answer to your question.
Oh my God.
I was taken on a journey. I went on a curated journey. But the journey was not about the curator. The journey was about what the curator wanted to show me. And I used the word curator so as to sidestep saying it was Lao Tzu or God or the God of Abraham or Buddha or, you know, whatever. I never saw who or what this was. I didn't have a visual.
Right.
I just had a presence and the clear, 1,000% conviction that I was being shown specific things that entity wanted me to see. It's like if you go to a museum, you go to New York and you get, you know, to the Met, you say, you know, I'm Duncan Trussell, I'd like a special tour. I say, oh, Mr. Trussell.
Let us get
the big curator for you. And he takes you for a couple hours through the museum and he shows you, you know, the greatest things that you absolutely have to see.
Right? Yes.
So it was a curated tour. And it's a way bigger subject than we have time for, but I saw a lot of things which challenged my idea of non-duality and they supported it, but they also, it wasn't exactly what I thought. You know, I saw the Big Bang. I zoomed through the galaxies, all kinds of stars and stuff. But this went on for days.
Wow.
Days. It wasn't a 30-second blip or a 3-second blip. It went on for days. And at the end of it, I saw what is to come for us, for human beings.
What is it?
I was shown this, and I believe what I was shown, as much as I believe that, you know, that's my head.
Yes.
And I resisted, to tell you. I was in awe of all of it, and there was no conversation because there was no space or appropriateness for a conversation. I just shut up and watched what that curator, I'm just using that word because I don't have a better, was showing me. When it came to that, what I saw we're going to become or what's going to happen to us, I reacted very badly. I didn't like it. And I got, you know, a little bit of a tough love kind of slap on the wrist from the curator, which is the only time the curator spoke. Only time I heard his voice, her voice, whatever. And the message was, sorry you don't like it, but it's not about you.
Doesn't matter
whether you like it, right? And And I think that wrestling, my pushing back, is what caused me to wake up. Of course, I was being given all kinds of things, you know, by the hospitalists to wake me. But from my point of view, you know, they'd been doing that all along and I didn't wake up. But, you know, I thrashed around and, you know, I guess I was told that I was very discomforted. Might have been excited, you know, I don't know. But when I was shown that, I pushed back. And now, of course, I've had lots of time to think about this. And I think I was wrong to push back, because if I hadn't pushed back, maybe I would have gotten more, learned more, seen more. You know, I regret that reaction now.
What? Wait, I'm sorry. Can you talk about what you were shown? What did you see?
You know, we don't want to make a negative podcast. Let me say that people wouldn't probably like, you know, it has to do with sort of morphing into AI, and that, you know, what we think of as human will not be anymore. And, you know, we'll be sort of like these giant crab tentacles in space. Like, think of an Alaskan king crab leg that's, you know, 80 miles long and made of some material that we can't identify now, carbon fiberish, you know, maybe nanotech kind of thing, but, you know, consciousness of everyone is in there. And it's nothing to do with planet Earth anymore, and we're just sort of floating around. And, you know, I've had lots and lots of thoughts about this, as you would expect. And many of them have come to, well, the one thing I didn't get from that vision was that we are consciousness, that there was any more suffering. And so the plus, which came to me later, I didn't realize it at the time of the vision, because I had just such a strong knee-jerk thing that I wasn't thinking. I was just going, no, right? But, you know, thinking about it later, I wondered about my limitations and prejudices in judging that. And, you know, it's just Taoism is like Buddhism when it comes to discernment and judgment. You know, one is good and the other one isn't. So, you know, better not to have those reactions. But I'm giving you the very barest bones of this. But, you know, that was kind of it. And I will say that since that experience, I have woken up a great deal. And I do see the non-dual pretty much 24/7 now.
Wow.
Which is a very interesting way to live. The way that people respond to me, the way that you respond to me, is different than it might have been if we'd done this interview a year ago or something, you know. And I was sitting in a Chinese restaurant eating some tofu and reading a book the other day, and a FedEx guy comes rushing in, and I figure he's making a delivery, but it turns out he's waiting for his lunch. You know, he came to pick up lunch and it wasn't ready. So he's kind of agitated staying there because, you know, he's got to go, FedEx.
Yeah.
And he comes over to my table. I've never seen this guy before. Comes over to my table and he looks at me, he says, "Who are you?"
Holy shit.
I said, like, you know, I'm a guy eating my, tofu. And he says, no, come on, really, who are you? And I said, you know, how can I help you? And he says, I just got this life where I'm always running, and I'm always running, and I don't have time. I never see my kids, and I got a truck, and I got a deck, and I got to make the, blah, 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 and this one's a live animal, and that one's an emergency package, and blah, blah, blah. And my whole life is like that, and, like, I don't want to live this way. And he spent 7 or 8 minutes waiting for his noodles or whatever, you know, telling me about his life.
Yeah.
And I pretty much say nothing. And then he leaves. And that kind of stuff just happens nonstop now, whereas it didn't really before. And I don't know what that is. An energetic thing, maybe. I don't know.
I've seen it with, you know, like the Trudy Goodman. I don't know if you know who she is. She runs Inside LA. But same thing, all the Ram Dass teachers. I remember she came to do a podcast with me, and I go to meet the Uber. The Uber driver is wiping tears away. He's just opened up to her for the whole ride about how he's struggling with alcoholism. And then he's like, "Listen, I'm going to wait. Is it okay if I wait here to drive her back? I'll just drive her back." And that is, that's the healing part, isn't it? That's what you're talking about. The, you become a healer.
Yeah, I guess so. So I don't like labels, but I do notice some shifts in this, you know. And I, yeah, there was a period of time in my early training where I went through a healing phase where I could do a lot of hands-on healing. I could see things like see a woman is pregnant before she knows, or see an incipient cancer in somebody, and I could affect things. But my teacher, he said, you know, Lao Tzu says that the way is this really clear highway. But for some reason, you know, everybody likes to get lost in little paths and shortcuts, yeah, and so on in the mountains. And he said, you know, this is a very sticky, these abilities that you develop, you know, this is 20 years ago or more, are very sticky because you're thinking, well, how could I ignore an ability to help people so directly and tangibly as that? Like, why would anything about me or my path be more important than being able to do that?
Right.
And he said, I understand why you feel that way. And all I can, and I can't make up your mind for you about what you want to do. But as your teacher, I will tell you, that is not your path.
Holy shit.
And that was one of the hardest, it remains one of the most difficult things that I've gone through in these decades of this. You know, I still wonder about that. But I, you know, I listened to him and I trusted him.
These cities, you know, I don't know. All the teachers are always sort of, you know, they were cautionary about these things. I could talk to you. I have so many things I would love to ask you and mention to you, but I know that it's been an hour and a half now. And you have COVID.
I feel okay. I feel okay.
Well, you know about John Lilly's vision, right? You know about John Lilly's vision? He saw that classic.
The
you saw, well, no, his vision of the technological future, like the his vision of the, he saw what you saw. He saw the same thing. He saw the thing. It's the thing. You, it's one of the possible things. The thing, whatever that is. I don't know what it is. Other people have reported in on it in different ways. But this I, you know, Ray Kurzweil, this is like his idea of like things, yeah, went right. He would be happy to hear what you said. We figured out how to deconstruct ourselves at the atomic level and then become sort of cosmic, sentient, whatever it may
right.
be.
He's an exponent of the idea that a lot of these AI guys are that, you know, our only purpose, actually, that the human race's purpose, organic life's purpose, is simply to facilitate the appearance of strong AI. And then after that, we, you know, let the universe understand itself. And then after that, we are irrelevant. And, you know, I am far, 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 far from in a position to judge whether that is true or not, or even,
right,
you know, how the hell do I know any of that? What I can say is that my, you know, my gut reaction was not to like it.
Yeah. Well, you went Job. You did the Job thing. That's what Job did too. Job, God fucks up his whole family, his whole life. And then isn't the answer to Job, like, who are you to judge that which made the Leviathan? You know, who are you? Who are we to like, to judge? What are you? It's like your toddler telling you how to drive your car or whatever. I don't blame you. If I saw spindly sentient crab legs is what like we're all headed towards, I wouldn't be like, wow, this is great. So, I'd be like, could you make them more colorful or something? What is this shit? You know, are we doing here?
I will say that there was one other thing that came out of that. So let's put the process in a different frame and sort of a more traditional Taoist frame. Let's say that I was climbing, you know, the stairs for the last 40 odd years in this, and I wanted to achieve some kind of awakening. Again, we don't use the E word, but, you know, to connect the greater heavenly circle with, you know, heaven and
yes.
And I get to 1,000 steps. And, you know, from 1,000 steps, I'm way, way up the mountain. I'm almost at the very top. And the view is good, you know, and I feel good about having done this work. And it's It's what's been important to me and I wanted to do it. And then, you know, some old sage, you know, drifts over and says, hey, pretty good. You know, you got to 1,000. You know, you're only 8 steps away from waking up. You know, I say, yeah. And he says, look, I gotta tell you that even though it's only 8, those 8 are going to be the most horrible, miserable, torturous steps. They're going to be so grotesque that your mind cannot even conceive of how much you are going to mentally and physically suffer to get up those last 8 steps. This, of course, is, you know, the last 2 years of my life with this stuff.
Right.
And, you know, in and out of the hospital and surgeries and, you know, everything.
Right? Yes.
Just misery beyond description. And what I would like to tell you is that I am the kind of monk that I would sort of like to be. And I'd like to say, yeah, he told me that, Duncan. And you know what I said? I said, bring it on, baby. Yeah. I don't care about any of that because I want those last 8. You know, I want to get up there.
Yeah.
But in fact, I'm a pussy. And in fact, I'm a wretch, like in the Amazing Grace.
Too. Yeah.
And I recognize when I came out of all this that I'm a wretch, because if someone had given me that choice before the last 2 years started and given me that scenario, I would have said, yeah, thanks. Look, I'm good here. I'm good. Yeah, I don't need those last 8. You know, maybe I'll practice another 25 years if I live that long, and you know, maybe I'll get somewhere, maybe I'll get 2 or 3 more steps. I don't need that. Nah. Because I'm a pussy. So you know, I'm a wimp. And I wouldn't.
Me too.
That, you know, people have challenged when I've said this to some friends, they said, well, you know, maybe your whole idea of like the macho monk who says bring it on is ridiculous. That nobody would say that. That even the, but you know, I still in my, you know, being a wuxia Chinese martial arts devotee fantasy stuff, you know, I'd still like to be that guy that says, you know, bring it on, and I don't bat an eye and I go through all this.
Yeah. But,
you know, that was not and is not me. And the gist of really understanding my own limitations and weakness is that, you know, whatever ego, you know, I still have ego like everybody else. But wherever it was before all this, it's not at the same place anymore, because it's not that I don't have urges or ambitions or anything. It's just that I realize it's all silly. Like all of that, there's no place for that. There's so much bigger things going on and more important that I don't get stuck in that little quagmire anymore. And if I do, it's for 3 seconds.
Right.
Because there's just no room for it. Not anything special about me other than I see there's no room for it.
Right.
That's it. Yeah.
Wow. Monk Yun Rao, thank you so much for this time that you've given us. Thank you. Thank you. This is so cool. Can we, I'm sorry to be rude, but can we do it again? Please.
I'd love to do it again. Thank you. You're a great interviewer. You ask such good questions and I enjoy your sense of humor.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. You have made my week, year, I don't know. That was such a wonderful conversation. And would you mind letting people know where they can find you?
Thank you. Sure. My main way of communicating with people is I have some online classes. I have a monthly newsletter, which goes out, you know, one time a month. It's a few thousand words about current events and Taoist ideas and things. Talks about, you know, planet Earth and some politics and religious stuff and martial arts. It's popular, and I'd love people to sign up for it. That's on my website, which is just Monk Yun Rao, MonkYunRao.com. It's easy to, it's a little subscription. It's very modest. But I also have 20-odd books and more in the pipeline. I'm not sure when this is going to air, but got a few new ones coming out. I just about 3 or 4 weeks ago let my memoir, which just came out. It's called The Monk of Park Avenue. You can find it on Amazon. It's a fun description of how I got to what you're hearing from a little kid in New York. So many books, websites, classes, online classes. Anyway, thank you for the opportunity and for having so much fun with you. That was really great.
Thank you, Monk Yun Ru, everybody. And all the links you need to find him will be at dunkertrussell.com. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
I look forward to the next one. Take care.
That was Monk Yun Ru, everybody. All the links you need to find him will be at dunkertrussell.com. A tremendous thank you to our sponsors, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
This is Eva Longoria from Hungry for History with Eva Longoria and Maite Gomez-Rejon. Like the song says, it's the most wonderful time of the year, and also a wonderfully busy one. All that merriment can weigh down even Santa's sleigh. So keep it wonderful by keeping yourself wonderful with a crisp, cold Coca-Cola. Ah, pause for fizzy joy. Look out for yourself, and then look out for everyone else. And together, we'll make this season as wonderful as it's meant to be. Enjoy a Coca-Cola. Refresh your holidays.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.